Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movie, Maze Runner, The Death Cure. And since there's only one new movie this week, I'm also going to look back at a couple Oscar nominees that I haven't had a chance to review on the show, and that includes Mudbound and The Breadwinner. I'm also going to be talking about the news, Trailer Park, box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring two films, The Foreigner and The Tiger Hunter. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, or you can reach out to me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news, I have to offer an apology. Apparently, some of my choices of words I used last week to discuss the Aziz Ansari story maybe got a little too graphic for some listeners. It's so difficult because they're news. You know, they're new. You can't not talk about them. And we see this in regular presidential politics as well. Back during the Clinton era, I remember listening to news people trying to tiptoe around him and Monica Lewinsky and what was going on, and his details were coming around with that. And even today, with some of the things that Trump says, you know, certain language that gets used, we all know the word that got thrown around everywhere from NPR to Fox News over the last couple of weeks. So it becomes difficult to talk about this when you have broadcast standards and the people that you're reporting on aren't exactly following the broadcast standards. So my apologies if anything I've said gets a little too graphic. I will try to cleanse the story as best I can in future episodes. But let's also talk about the big news story this week when it comes to Hollywood is Oscar nominations. That, of course, came out. And the expected ones that we're going to get in there, like Shape of Water, got one fewer than the record of nominations. And I think that's the movie to beat right now. I mean, if there's a front runner, that's it. I mean, we're not in a position where Titanic was sweeping everything. And because Harvey Weinstein's not in the picture anymore, we don't have the Harvey Weinstein effect of him pushing a movie, stuff like The King's Speech or The Artist that gets to the top. So I think it's sort of organically bubbling to the top here. And I think that's what Shape of Water is, possibly Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Those are the ones to beat at this point. But you have 9 nominations, which I always find is funny. They can do up to 10, but they're like, nah, we'll do 9. We could have put another movie here, but you guys didn't do good enough, Hollywood. Definitely Del Toro's, I think, the one to beat for Best Director, because he's won it multiple times. And this is interesting. If you want to talk on a diversity level, the director category tends to see it the most. And they sometimes pull the movie out from under you, like Ang Lee won Best Director for Brokeback Mountain, but that didn't win Best Film. Oddly enough, African-Americans, Black people have not won the director, even when it's like gone the movie, like Moonlight last year, Barry Jenkins didn't get it. And I remember several years ago, Steve McQueen didn't get it for 12 Years a Slave. What's interesting though is in terms of diversity, the last 4 years, 3 of the winners have been Mexicans. Well, one of them was, you know, it was a repeat. You had Inarritu win twice, and you had Alfonso Cuarón win for Gravity. And Del Toro, I believe he's Puerto Rican. So again, you got some interesting diversity there that nobody seems to talk about. Everyone did. In America, a lot of people, when they say diversity, a lot of people mean African-American. And that shows when you go through the list. I saw somebody on Twitter say it's a great day for diversity when the Oscar nominations came out. I'm like, well, yeah, if you're Black. But if you're Asian, there's very little diversity. I mean, the closest you get is Kamal Nanjiani for The Big Sick. He got nominated with his wife, who's not Pakistani, but he got nominated for a Best Screenplay Oscar. So the diversity thing is always in air quotes, in my opinion. I think the big surprises were like Get Out. Not that Get Out got some traction, but that it got as much as it did. It got a Best Picture nod, it got a Best Actor nod, which was a huge surprise, and it got a Best Director nod. And same thing, Lady Bird got Best Picture, Best Director nominations. They're not going to win. And that has nothing to do with race or gender. It has more to do with experience. Usually to win the Academy Award, you got to have been up for it before. When it comes to director, you have to have some sort of experience. It's happened with Steven Spielberg, Martin Scorsese, he threw the roof, you know, Ang Lee even, you know, he had shown up in the mix before. The only real shoo-ins that I see, though, are Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill in Darkest Hour. I think that's a shoo-in. He's going to win just because that was such a great performance. And that's nothing against anybody else, except maybe Denzel Washington. That was kind of a gimme because Roman J. Israel Esquire was not that good of a movie. I mean, he was fine in it, but I don't know if he necessarily rose beyond that. But Gary Oldman, it doesn't matter. Gary Oldman's gonna win that one. And then I think Frances McDormand is the one to beat for Best Actress. I think Allison Janney is the one to beat for Best Supporting Actress, and probably Sam Rockwell is Best Supporting Actor. So I think that those sort of big six are gonna fall in line, with what people would expect. And of course, everyone's gonna be upset because Get Out's not gonna win. And Lady Bird's not going to win. And Call Me By Your Name's not going to win. And the reason for that is because we had the LGBT movie from last year, Moonlight, win. And the Oscars tend to not repeat social issues from year to year. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Pacific Rim Uprising, which comes out on March 23rd.
The Kaiju. They're going to come back.
How'd they get into our world?
Someone let them in. Someone from our world.
We're going to need more pilots.
We have them.
This is our time to make a difference. Do you understand? Jaeger pilots, do you understand?
Now, if you recall from several years ago, if you're a listener for that long, I loved Pacific Rim. I thought that that was a great movie, and it was what action big robots should be, not what Transformers was doing. Part of it was Guillermo del Toro's influence on his sort of this kaiju movie, this American kaiju movie. I loved Pacific Rim. I thought it was a lot of fun. Didn't do as well in America as the Transformers movies, which is a shame because the Transformers movies are garbage. And I was real nervous with the first trailer, like the teaser trailer for this. When that came out, it looked like it was going to be a Transformers movie. And I was like, I don't know about this. This trailer looks a little more in line with the Pacific Rim action. So I just hope that this doesn't suck. I'm looking forward to it, and I love Pacific Rim, and I'd like to see this become a regular thing, because that first movie was one heck of a film. The next one I want to talk about is Super Troopers 2, which opens on, big surprise, 420, which is April 20th.
1, 2, 3, let's do it!
It turns out the French-Canadian town
St. Georges-du-Laurent is actually on American soil. You'll be phasing out a Canadian Mountie unit.
Let's give a big Canadian welcome to the Vermont Highway Patrol.
Come on, guys. They've come up here to tell us how great it's going to be for all of us to become Americans.
Repeat after me. I pledge of allegiance to the United States.
This is weird because Super Troopers itself was kind of a bomb until it hit video and all the stoners could watch it on repeat. And you see that a lot with stoner movies. You see that with like a movie like Dude, Where's My Car? Did not do very well in the theaters, but it did extremely well on home video and cable. And that's because stoners love comedies, but they don't get off the couch to go to the actual movie theater to see them. They just like to watch them at home. So I think Super Troopers 2 is going to bomb. Nobody's going to see this movie in the theaters, and then it's going to do extremely well on DVD and video and on demand and all the different media platforms there are that you can watch at home while you're getting high. The first Super Troopers was mildly humorous for me because I wasn't high through the whole thing. So we'll see what happens with Super Troopers 2. I think it's going to be a blip and disappear and then have record-breaking home media sales. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to revisit some Oscar films, Mudbound and The Breadwinner.
Because we can, can, can! Oh.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about some films that they're out. Like Mudbound is the first one I'm going to talk about. You could have watched this in the last 2 months. It, I think, came out sometime in mid-November. The story is two families in Mississippi, one black and one white, face very different challenges after World War II.
Over there, I was a liberator. People lined up in the streets waiting for us.
Sometimes I actually miss it.
I'm coming back from the fire.
You're the one I always talk about. I own and I own parts are the only way to get up from under their foot.
Crawling back from the dead.
I don't want you working for them.
I won't be working for them. I'll be working for us.
Coming back from the fire.
Went off to fight for my country to come back and find their head and change a bit.
I don't know what they let you do over there, but you in Mississippi now.
This one got a lot of buzz. I mean, huge buzz. I hadn't seen it yet because they sent me the book, but I'm not going to read that. I don't read books before I see a movie, especially when they literally send me a book like a week before a movie opens. But Mudbound got a lot of buzz. It got a lot of traction. Dee Reese didn't get a nomination for Best Director. And of course, a lot of people are saying, well, that's because she's a black woman. Oh, and she's a lesbian, too. I mean, so there's like all these like social categories you could tick off on your golf card. One nomination could get like three of them. But she didn't get it. And then I saw somebody say on Twitter, when it comes to Dee Reese, her other movie was Pariah, she's best known for, which, oh gosh, that was 3 or 4 years ago, which I wasn't a big fan of. And it's kind of for the same reason as Mudbound, spoiler alert. Somebody said if Dee Reese were a white male, she would have been directing the next Marvel movie. But after seeing Pariah and Mudbound, I don't want to see a Marvel movie directed by her. It would be the most boring, long, drawn out, depressing Marvel movie, and there'd be no action in it whatsoever. But that's just me. Mudbound is an interesting idea because what it does is it juxtaposes the life of black people and white people in Mississippi in the 1940s. My problem with this movie isn't like the concept. I think that's a neat concept to juxtapose sort of like the black experience and the white experience in the same era. My problem is this movie just is, it's depressing. I mean, from the beginning, everything starts with them narrating very slowly from Carey Mulligan narrating about learning to shoot a shotgun all the way to the black family saying goodbye to their son to go off to war. That's the beginning of the movie. Just that slow, deliberate, drawn out, overly dramatic, self-important narration. And then the movie itself, it's depressing, and the people, the characters are just unappealing. All of them are. And here's the thing. There's some bad stuff that happened to some of the characters, especially later in the film. Even if you take that out, it's the most depressing movie I'm going to see, just because the life is depressing. And I get it. There were struggles living in the Delta back in the 40s, but I mean, it's misery porn is what it is to me. It's just how awful it is to live there, and we're all sick, and we're dying, and we're poor, and the rains have come. Oh, it's just. And then awful things happen to some of the characters, and I'm just like, well, that's a pick-me-up. And I get it. The world's not a lovable, cherub-driven place all the time, but I like to see a little bit of optimism in my movies, and there's none. None in here at all. It's just none. I wasn't a fan, we'll say. Well-acted, well-produced. The cinematography is nice. I mean, it's all kind of this mix of grays and browns because they're in the muddy Delta, and they even say in this in the movie, Carey Mulligan says, you know, when I think of this farm, I think of mud. I dream in shades of brown because that's the mud and the dirt and the clay and everything's just this one kind of section of the palette, and it was a chore to watch. So I know people are loving it and it's getting all these nominations, but I have to say I thought Mudbound sucked.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about The Breadwinner. After her father is jailed, a young girl living in Taliban-occupied Afghanistan dresses as a boy to earn money for her family.
When you're a boy, you can go anywhere you like.
I'm going to find Boba.
No, you're not.
I'm going. There's nothing you can do to stop me.
Maybe if we think of it like a story, huh?
Is it a happy story or a sad story?
Just wait and see.
This is done by the people who did The Secret of the Kells and Song of the Sea. Those were both very Irish-dominated movies, as had Irish culture to it. This goes into Middle Eastern culture, and it reminds me a little bit of that movie Persepolis that came out about 10 years ago, which was about a girl growing up in Iran right after the transition from the Shah to the Ayatollah. This one deals with the people of Afghanistan. And it digs back into the history, because Afghanistan was interesting, because this is an interesting pairing with 12 Strong from last week. Afghanistan goes way, way, way back in history, and it's constantly tried to be conquered, and it's fought for its independence, and yeah, there's a rich history for Afghanistan, and they make a point to show this, and they show this in the very innovative animation style, where they sort of have this story that follows this girl, this sort of fairy tale that she's telling that parallels her journey in a much more real, brutal, dangerous world. One of the things that's interesting about this movie is it shows Afghani life not as this awful, oppressive, we're waiting to get shot every day. Now, don't get me wrong. They certainly show the Taliban as the way it is, of being, extremely, Islamically conservative. And I mean, to an extreme level of, women have to cover themselves, not make their presence even known, and to be hidden inside all the time. So there is that oppressiveness to the Taliban that's not washed away or anything. There's this one character. He's like, I can kill you for that. And the hotheadedness that can result from that. But it also just shows the Afghani people as just people. The people who are just living there outside of Kabul, which is where this story takes place. The idea of a girl dressing as a boy to get access to society, that's nothing new. I mean, we've seen that in many, many, many times. And with a lot of conservative cultures, like I remember Barbara Streisand made that movie Yentl back in the 80s, where she was in the very conservative Jewish community and dressed as a man. And so we've seen this before. Going back to like Oz, quite literally with Ozma in the Oz books. So the approach is different, but it's an interesting look. It gives a gateway into the culture with a certain degree of childlike innocence, even though her innocence is being lost in this because of the war that's going around and the Taliban taking over. But it's sort of like, remember that movie Queen of Katwe? I think it was last year or the year before, and it takes place in South Africa, and it's about this girl who plays chess. And what I liked about that movie, one of the things they did is they showed living in the slums of South Africa, not as this depressing, horrible thing. It's just that was just their life. And they dealt with it, as opposed to like Mudbound, which I talked about, where it's just like depression, depression, depression. This is awful. I'd hate myself living 5 minutes in that world. And so I think that this gives a rather tender look at family and look at the struggles that this girl faces. I wouldn't say it's a kid's movie because it has some pretty intense stuff happening to it, but it's a well-made movie. And I'm going to have to say that overall it's worth seeing and it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That is it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Maze Runner, The Death Cure.
And The Magnificent.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the new movie, the only new movie this week. And that is Maze Runner, The Death Cure. In this third film of the series, the maze-running rebels have to break their friend out of a research facility.
We're running out of time. You've seen what's happening out there.
They took you because you're immune to a plague that's wiping out the human race. They think you're worth sacrificing to find a cure.
The last city. We control base of operations. It's the Lion's Den, hermano.
That's where we're going.
3 years we spent behind walls trying to break out. Now we're trying to break back in.
Now, first of all, one of the questions I've been getting asked about this is, why is there just one movie? Whereas like last week there were like three, and the last couple of weeks there have been multiple movies, even though they're not big movies, there have been multiple ones coming out. Well, there's a reason for it, and a lot of it has to do with award season. Over the course of January, a lot of these movies that got limited releases and got qualifying releases before December 31st are finally getting dropped into theaters. One of the other reasons is you get a lot of small movies. No movie's expecting to make more than $20 million a week. When Avengers Infinity War comes out, there might be one other movie that goes up against it in terms of counter-programming, but all the other movies are going to leave because they're like, this movie's going to make $200 million its opening weekend. Everyone's going to that, and there'll be fewer screens available for other things. Also, the week that the Academy Awards come out, they tend to clear the slate a bit. Movies like, for example, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri came out around Thanksgiving, so it's kind of worked its way through the theaters. It's going to get a re-expansion this week so that people will want to go see it because they say, oh, well, it got a nomination, it got the Oscar nomination, let's go see what this is about. And while it doesn't mean that they bring in another $50 million on the weekend, you do see a significant bump. You're going to see that with Lady Bird. You're going to see that with Three Billboards. You're going to see that with Shape of Water, even though the Shape of Water is still kind of in its initial release. And yeah, I know I always get the questions like, are people not paying attention to the Oscars? The Oscars don't care about box office. They care about the movies that they either like or they think are significant socially. And that's the way it's always been. I mean, going back to when like The Last Emperor in the 80s won Best Picture, nobody was seeing that movie. That wasn't a huge blockbuster. You know, or when Annie Hall won in 1977 instead of Star Wars, which was the biggest movie of all time at the time. Now, the Maze Runner movies, what's interesting about this is the history behind them is once you had Harry Potter, I remember in like 2007, 2008, everyone was trying to find the next big series and they finally stumbled upon Twilight and then they found the Hunger Games. And the Hunger Games became a massive phenomenon. And then they said, oh, dystopian futures. And that's when they got these young adult books that have dystopian futures like the Divergent series and the Maze Runner is another one. And they were trying to get the next one. And I think we've kind of worked our way through these books, kind of like found footage had a trend and we finally worked our way through it. Sexy Vampires had a trend and we've worked our way through it. And we've kind of worked our way through the dystopian future. I think it was coming down off of the Hunger Games movies already because the last two underperformed compared to the first two. And so you had Divergent, which crashed and burned and they didn't even make the last installment. And now you have The Maze Runner. The first movie did pretty well. It came out like in September. It wasn't a huge hit, but it was enough to kind of justify its existence and say, hey, we're going to make this into a series. And then they did the next one, The Scorch Trials, which didn't perform as well. And now they've got this movie. And I think this isn't really the death cure. This is the death knell for dystopian science fiction for kids. Now, I mean, that doesn't mean you're not going to have these books written, but you're not going to make them into multi-million dollar motion pictures. These series tend to not be as good as that, like, first book. The Hunger Games, it worked. And even though I thought the ending of The Hunger Games was not nearly as good as the first two installments, you're not going to get the Harry Potter effect, where Harry Potter, the later books are actually better. The stories are better. And part of that's because J.K. Rowling grew as an author. And she, by the time she got to the seventh book, she was really got a handle on things. Divergent's a mess. And the first episode of Divergent was interesting, and then it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the same thing with The Maze Runner. I honestly went and saw this movie. I've seen all three movies. I can't even remember why they're in the maze. What was the purpose of them being in the maze? It's so convoluted and so complex, and it makes no internal sense because they're supposed to be these kids that are immune to this virus that's causing people to turn into zombies, but yet they put them in such dangerous situations that they could die from common cold and a splinter. In this sort of Maze Runner world, it doesn't make sense. If you've got somebody who's in the same thing, the Dylan O'Brien's character in this movie, he's the main guy. We got to save him because he's immune. But still, some people are getting sick and some people aren't. But yet they're trying to kill him at every chance. It makes no sense internally. It's just enough to sort of like get the ball rolling and then just don't think about the details. And this movie's just, there's not even about anything but them trying to save this one kid that I don't even remember. They don't even do the due diligence in the movie to say, hey, remember this bit in the last movie where XYZ happened? Yeah, we're following up on that. No, and there's none of that. Oh, this is not a good movie. So it's convoluted. It's a mess. I mean, yeah, it looks good at times and it has things blowing up, but it totally sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. It's something I wanted to mention, and this is taking place of a review, but I think it's worth talking about because Twitter has become its own monster, and film Twitter has become its own monster as well. And you're seeing that with people eating their own, and you're seeing like film Twitter suddenly having a backlash against a movie like Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, saying it's racist. So there's a reason why Twitter is a problem, and you see this across the board. How many people out there, raise a hand, show your hands, I'll see you. Yep, you chubby person there in Little Rock, I'm talking to you too. Who out there has had some sort of angst or problem with people on their Facebook feed or Twitter feed either arguing, getting overly political, commenting, being bullying, being abusive, being offensive, just barraging you or hitting you with a barrage of articles, usually political. Everybody has. Now, here's a reason. The reason why social media is a problem, and I think we just have to work through this as a society. Social media is not social interaction. People think it is, and it does bring people together and tear people apart, but it's not social situations. It's different. One of the appealing things of social media is it's something that introverts can engage in. And the difference between an introvert and an extrovert isn't how you necessarily appear, but it's how you recharge and how you, build your strength back up. And introverts go home and they kind of get in their own little bubble. But what social media does is it allows the introverts, and I'm an introvert, by the way, for anyone who knows, I test extreme introvert. So I'm not like slagging on somebody for being an introvert because I am. But what social media does is it opens that window for the introverts to engage. And it's great that they're getting the chance to interact and meet people and have a social situation. But what it does is you have all the extroverts who are used to the water cooler discussion, who are much more aggressive, and they don't know how to handle the introverts. And the introverts don't know how to handle the extroverts, because in a real social situation, in a real situation where you're standing around a water cooler, each introvert and extrovert knows how to handle themselves and each other. And so that's what ends up happening in social media. It's about how people are in their personal life and how people are online being very, very different and having no immediate consequence. And I think the big thing that has to happen is people have to just learn to deal with each other and know when to drop things. And it's okay to block people and it's okay to silence people. I'll tell you, I've gotten rid of people who just won't shut up. Who will take issue with something I say, and even if I go, hey, we'll have to agree to disagree, they will still keep barraging me. And it can be anything from a political argument all the way down to, I didn't like this movie. That's the problem with social media, is you get people wrapped up in their own self-importance. It's that introverted outlook that the extroverts don't know how to deal with it, and the introverts don't know how to deal with this new power. Anyways, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the box office and the home cinema roundup featuring two films, The Foreigner and The Tiger Hunter. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I am going to jump right into talking about the box office here. The box office last weekend, you actually had two movies overperform, and that was 12 Strong and Den of Thieves. I mean, they kind of came in horse race. I mean, 12 Strong was right ahead of Den of Thieves, just under $16 million, which isn't bad. I mean, obviously it's not doing what American Sniper or Lone Survivor did, but I think it's a different type of movie. It's along the lines closer to 13 Hours of Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. And Den of Thieves overperformed, which is depressing and awful because it's a terrible movie. Forever My Girl barely made it into the top 10 with $4.2 million. But the winner, though, last weekend was Jumanji with just under $20 million, which is, again, a fantastic hole. It was only, like, down 30%. Jumanji is over $300 million. It is one of these surprise hits. Heck, it might win this weekend, for all I know, because, I don't know, The Maze Runner, I really don't think it's got much to, I mean, people are saying maybe $20 million, but if you look at the other ones, they were right around $30 million, but those two Maze Runner movies were, like, a year apart. And this new one is like 2.5 years later. They may have lost audience by then. It might be a miserable time. Hostels might end up getting something. But again, I think Hostel, nobody wants to see that movie. Jumanji could win again. Who knows? But you're also going to see a bump on a lot of the award nominees this weekend as well. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first one I want to hit is one that came out in October, and I had a very busy October, so I ended up not seeing it, and that is The Foreigner. Jackie Chan stars as a man who loses his daughter in a terrorist attack and relentlessly goes after the bombers.
An explosion rocks the city today.
20,000 pounds for the names of the bombers. That's not how we do things here.
Hello?
Mr. Hennessy, he's here again.
That's 5 days in a row now.
What does he want?
His daughter was killed in the bombing.
Mr. Hennessy, please find out the names of the bombers.
I work for the government, not terrorists.
You used to work for them.
I don't know who the bombers are.
I don't believe you.
This is directed by Martin Campbell, and he's got such an interesting career because he's done some incredible stuff. I mean, he rebooted Bond twice. He was the director of GoldenEye, which was the first Pierce Brosnan movie, which rebooted it after a big bankruptcy turnover in the 90s, and then he also rebooted it again in 2006 with Casino Royale when they brought in Daniel Craig. And while GoldenEye is not my favorite Bond movie, it's not even my favorite Pierce Brosnan Bond movie, Casino Royale is a fantastic Bond movie. And it's my favorite of the Daniel Craig Bond films. I mean, he's done some great stuff, but then he's also done some kind of stinkers, like Edge of Darkness and... While I thought Green Lantern was okay, it was not a great Green Lantern movie. And Jackie Chan's okay in the movie. The problem with this film, and it's funny because I was looking at the behind the scenes just has a couple interviews and a making of feature. You got Campbell talking about the movie and in the interviews, and he's like, well, there's this subplot with Pierce Brosnan as this Minister of Defense or something from Northern Ireland, and it's dealing with his past and the IRA and how this kind of comes back and the politics starts to become very difficult. And I said, whoa, that's not the subplot. That's the plot of the movie. The movie's not about Jackie Chan. The movie's about Pierce Brosnan and his connections to the IRA and his connections with terrorism in the past, and now he's trying to be a legitimate politician. Jackie Chan just kind of shows up as an agent of chaos trying to track down these people who killed his daughter. It's not a movie about Jackie Chan's character. There's huge chunks of screen time where you don't even see him, where you forget that he's in the movie. And I think that's part of the problem is if people went to go see a Jackie Chan movie where it shows Jackie Chan in an acting performance, not much acting. It's just a lot of him looking dour and upset. And you're not getting the action because he's only got two or three action scenes in there. It looked like it was a script that was written about this IRA story. And then they added in this Jackie Chan part. And then they call him the Foreigner for the title of the movie, which you would expect to be about Jackie Chan, and it's not. It's about the IRA. And these IRA movies are very difficult because the politics behind it is very complex and it goes back forever politically. And it's very hard for anybody who's not Irish, if anyone who's not British, to really get what's going on with the politics behind this. And they have made movies about the Irish politics. Tommy Lee Jones and Jeff Bridges, they did a bombing movie with them, with the IRA. And those are always hard for anybody to really wrap their brain out of who really doesn't understand Irish politics. And this is no different. So I'm going to have to say The Foreigner kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Tiger Hunter, which is another Blu-ray release that is out there. An engineer from India in the 1970s comes to America to find a job in order to impress his family and the girl he loves back home.
America. America is where you find greatness. We have a temporary draftsman job down in the basement.
No. I'm a highly skilled engineer.
If you want to fit in the right circle, you've got to talk the talk. These guys, we're talking about a lifetime of schmoozing about things like golf, ethnic foods.
I want to be a professional American.
Where are you living? Have they given you a new house?
Not exactly. So many of these men have technical degrees, yet they are working as taxi drivers and dishwashers.
There's no shame in any kind of job you do.
Now, this one stars Danny Pudi, who's best known for being on Community. He played the character of Abed. And this is written by a woman who is a first-generation American. Her parents were immigrants. And so she kind of wanted to tell a unique immigrant story. And it takes place in the 70s. So it's not about a modern immigrant story. It's about sort of like the last generation's immigrant story. And she said she gets a lot of these stories that show up in this movie. And it shows what he's dealing with coming across from India to America. And she wanted to show that India wasn't just everyone living in squalor and depression and feces and garbage, which you often get in movies. So she wanted to show India as, you know, just a real place to live and where people are happy and have a decent life. And then he moves to America and it shows the immigrant experience from the past, which is easier to look at than the immigration is a big debate right now, especially right now, in American politics. And it's easier to kind of look at it from 40 years ago. So you're not looking at the immediacy of what the exact arguments are today. It's a cute movie. I mean, I think she's a first-time writer and first-time director, and I think she does a good job putting it together. There's some stuff in there that's kind of overly standard. Like, it's this whole story where he's got this love. He loves this girl from back home, and he wants to impress her. He's loved her ever since a kid. This feels like a screenwriting 101 bit that she put in because she has to have a love interest in there, and you really don't need it. I mean, it's such a tired concept. It was more interested in the story of this character going over and trying to make it big. Cause the whole thing is the character, he's an engineer, but he's not given a job as an engineer. He's given a job as a draftsman. He's kind of working in the basement, and he does talk about all these other Indians that are with him. And he's like sharing an apartment with like 13 other guys. And they can only get jobs as like street sweepers and custodians and garbage collectors. And other very low skilled jobs, but they're really smart people with degrees. And if there's an absurdity to that now, because it's sort of like there was a movie called Glory Road a couple years ago, about 10 years ago, about the first college basketball coach to let black people play basketball with the white people. And it's an absurd thing now because you're like, really? You're like, no one would ever say we're not going to put black people on our basketball team because there's a whole lot of people out there who are very good playing basketball, and it's so ingrained in the culture and pastimes. And I mean, yeah, the idea of not having black people play basketball is an absurd thing now. And to people nowadays, because so many engineers do come from India and Asia, the idea of saying, oh, well, we can't have this person who's from India. He couldn't possibly have an engineering degree. I mean, there's an absurdity to watching this now, but it's an interesting movie because it does kind of give that immigrant experience. And everybody's comes from immigrants. I come from immigrants. My family's Hungarian, and they struggled with prejudice and language barriers and anti-immigrant ideas and policies back when they came, you know, over 100 years ago to this country. Same thing with my Irish ancestors who came from my other side of the family. So this is what it was like in the 70s. I of course, my family dealt with it with stuff in the turn of the century, of the 19th century to the 20th. And we have stuff now. So it's an interesting way of looking at things. And ultimately, I think it's a worthwhile movie to see, even though it has some goofy parts to it, but it's kind of sweet at times. So overall, I'm going to have to say that The Tiger Hunter kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Other movies on DVD this week include Jigsaw, Geostorm, Thank You for Your Service, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, and Goodbye Christopher Robin. That is it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the new horror film Winchester. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.